Over the past couple days, I've noticed it seems like there's quite a few stories that no one can pay attention to because of all the confusion and chaos that the president is bringing. I wanted to ask you, for people concerned with climate change, is environmental democracy in jeopardy right now, as WRI says? Talk about it.
Yeah, we're, WRI, we're a fact-based think tank, and based on the facts, you know, we're worried. The nominees for the Trump cabinet are deeply embedded and steeped in fossil fuel industries, have stood up and offered policies to continue to move forward a fossil fuel dependent nation. So we're very concerned. I mean, and then on top of that, you know, in the last 72 hours, we've seen the administration, you know, not just, you know, retool their websites, but also to take basic information and data off websites that is not normal during a presidential transition. There's been some of that put back on because of our outcry and the outcry of a lot of other people. But yeah, I mean, there are, and we now are seeing the executive orders on a variety of environmental issues and other issues. So yeah, this is a real deep concern.
It does feel unprecedented to me as well. And at the KBOO Evening News Department, we have for the past month covered the efforts of climate change scientists in other parts of the world and in the United States to try to preserve their data, trying to back up data that they know the Environmental Protection Agency had regarding climate change. I actually think that's unprecedented.
It is unprecedented in a part of our science and research section here at WRI was also part of the effort to get as much of that data downloaded from EPA and Department of Energy and other sources, data that relates directly to climate science and climate action.
Okay, let's dig into that for just a minute. So when Trump came into power, I don't even understand who started taking climate change information off of the federal government websites. And another thing that has been happening is that the EPA was not allowed to, employees were not allowed to talk with each other. Can you talk about that? Sam, some of this stuff is so shocking to me, I can't take it in. What happened with the employees? Are they allowed to talk with each other? Is there any update on that?
I don't have an update on that. Some of the information that was some of the data and scientific research that was pulled down from the EPA website. Some of that has gone back up. The administration has backed off some of its, while it was still president-elect, transition team backed off of some of the questionnaires regarding people's activities, querying whether people worked in the climate action issues and if they attend conferences. And there was a big outcry to that. We were part of that, and the administration sort of backed off of that. So, you know, the kind of work that you're doing at KBOO to raise the visibility of these foundational issues that are fundamental to a working democracy, which is the free flow of information, you know, I think is so essential. This president and his administration will likely be in office for 4 years, and, you know, they are going to pursue their vision for this country, but it's out of bounds to limit the free flow of information and climate science and data that have been paid for by tax dollars.
We have here again at KBOO Evening News, we've covered the water protectors at Standing Rock extensively over the past year. And Sam, some of the most compelling recent movements against fossil fuel infrastructure seem to be linked to movements for clean water. So that's definitely true in Standing Rock in North Dakota, but it was also true in Mosier last year when the fuel train derailed and some of the oil destroyed a fish hatchery pond and leaked into the Columbia River. Can you talk about some of the ways climate change activism or climate change as an issue touches on other areas? Is there an interconnectedness we should be examining? Other things besides the water?
Yeah, there's, I mean, the interconnectedness with climate change and equity, you know, how the impacts of a changing climate, more extreme weather, whether it's drought or flooding or both in the course of a few months, in unprecedented extreme ways, you know, if it tends to affect everyone in a community, but affects those neighborhoods that are economically distressed, that are, you know, economically shut out. And, you know, so there's the issue of climate impacts, climate change, and basic equity. There's also, in addition to greenhouse gas emissions, there are other air pollutants that are present as part of the emissions of greenhouse gas, but separate from it as well. And, you know, those remain a serious problem in a lot of cities, like Portland and a lot of cities around the world. And, you know, the other sort of cross-cutting issue that we are focused in on here at WRI, and that is, you know, food and the impacts of the diet that we have gotten used to in the United States, and how much energy, water, how much devastation that eating habit, that, you know, our eating habits in the United States have all around the world. So this intersects climate, the issue of climate change intersects with a whole host of issues. Those are just a few more.
And you do have this really interesting initiative on the WRI website about working to reduce U.S. food waste by 50%. I want to talk about that in a couple minutes. I just want to spend a little more time looking at the politics of climate change, climate disruption in the United States and around the world for a little while longer. I know, Sam, that you are, I think you're considered to be the climate change expert for WRI in the United States. But as I was looking you up, I feel like I saw more articles with your quotes from other countries. How can you talk a little bit about how other countries view this issue differently than we do, or what's going on there?
Yeah, in my role as director of U.S. for World Resource Institute, I've been asked to interact with our other country offices, often at their national congresses for cities, or you know, be part of panel discussions on climate issues. And I did a fair amount of traveling as mayor. I've done a lot more traveling in this job, and really have deepened my understanding of how others view us on the issue of climate change and what's at stake globally, you know, given current trends, and what are the real risks if the United States, as one of the leaders of the world, one of the largest economies of the world, backtracks. And the fact of the matter is, in other countries, they know full well the per capita greenhouse gas emissions for Americans. And they know that this very carbon pollution emitting lifestyle that we have in the United States, you know, for most countries, is nowhere near the quality of life that they enjoy, and that, you know, it can come off easily, you know, and they want to get to a level of prosperity and well-being. They strive for that in many countries that the United States have. So if they do that, if they're successful at that, and they do it in the way that we in a lot of the developing world or just the United States have done it, then the amount of carbon pollution released into the atmosphere, it will be devastating. So how do we all find a way to have prosperity and more equity, to have health, to have well-being, opportunities, and do that in a low greenhouse gas emissions way? That's what we have to do in the United States, and that's what we have to help other countries do and invest in. They deserve a level of prosperity that we have, but we need to together figure out how that prosperity is just not so polluting, carbon pollution, letting so much carbon pollution into the environment. So, so I was in Delhi, India a couple months ago, and that country is quickly growing in terms of its middle class. And they are working really hard to electrify. There's plenty of the country that doesn't have basic services. And, you know, part of the WI team in India is working to provide electrification to the country that does, to the parts of the country that doesn't have it, but it be renewable energy, not coal. So those are, there's work to be done to help folks around the world. There's work to be done here at home.
But do you feel that there's going to be a revival of what are now considered to be sort of dead fossil fuel infrastructure projects on the horizon? More energy has been pumped into, like you said, you know, not coal, but more energy has been pumped now into trying to justify building out more infrastructure projects for coal, natural gas, fracked gas, all these things. Are they going to come back to life, some of the ones that have been defeated so far? Is that possible?
Yeah, I mean, President-elect Trump and now President Trump has talked about bringing back the coal industry in the United States. The coal industry in the United States, you know, among other things, suffers from the fact that natural gas is cheaper to produce electrical power than coal. So that's going to be hard to bring back just based on market forces alone. I think there'll be significant pushback from Americans if, in an effort to bring coal back, there's a, you know, any attempt to roll back, you know, the mercury emissions reduction rules that were put in place decades ago. So I think there'll be an effort, I think, between market forces and just basic environmental safety standards, which Americans embrace. I think it'll be hard for coal to come back. A lot of new energy is coming on with natural gas, but in the last couple of years, clean energy has really gotten its footing. And, you know, it's now there's more investment globally last full calendar year in clean energy sources, power sources, electricity sources, than there were in fossil fuels. And part of the reason for that is that clean energy, unsubsidized, is getting almost at commensurate cost with electricity sourced by natural gas. It's getting cheaper and cheaper to manufacture turbines, to manufacture photovoltaic, and to install them, and that is going to continue. So, you know, part of what recently had a column in the media, you know, directed at President Trump, who during a New York Times interview poo-pooed, you know, this idea that America is a powerhouse, pardon the pun, in terms of clean energy, that Americans didn't construct or manufacture wind turbines. Well, that's just not true. You know, there are over 350,000 Americans and others working at jobs in this country renewable industry, and it's the fastest growing industrial job sector in terms of job creation in the last 12 months.
All right, Sam Adams, former mayor of Portland, now with the World Resources Institute. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Absolute pleasure. Big fan of KBOO. Thanks for all that you do.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, The Yes Man Fix the World, will play Friday, February 3rd at 7 p.m. The Yes Man Fix the World is the true story of two guys in thrift store suits who impersonate corporate bigwigs and follow the twisted logic of corporate capitalism to its conclusion, exposing the absurdities and ironies of an economic system that ruthlessly rules the planet. Again, that's The Yes Man Fix the World, Friday, February 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. to you waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Good evening. You are tuned in to Labor Radio, and your hosts this evening are Michael Morrow. Good evening, Michael.
Good evening, Lane. And Lane Ponce.
Thank you very much. And we have a couple wonderful guests here this evening. We're going to start with a couple announcements, and then we'll move into a discussion with a local author. And her husband is here also, who is a retired bookseller. So we've got an active discussion going on this evening. Michael, what sort of announcements did you have going?
Well, one of our guests shortly will announce the upcoming Northwest Labor History Conference in May, going to be up in Canada. That will be upcoming. The thing that I wanted to remind folks was the value of our Northwest Labor Press, which is a wonderful periodical that comes out and fills us in. It's online if you want to check it out online. They do a great job. nwlaborpress.org. And in the recent copy, they talk about the Staples boycott ending. This was the post office's early attempt a few years ago to privatize the post office. The postal workers fought against this. They were allowing the Staples folks to basically become postal workers in the Staples stores. It took a couple of years to make this happen, but the American Postal Worker Union, good folks, won this. And by the end of this month, end of February, Staples will stop doing that. And so they will no longer be post offices in Staples stores. And that's the kind of news that you get in Northwest Labor Press. So I highly urge people to stay on top of that publication.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. I have some information to share with our listeners. There's a lot going on in the community around the events around the Trump election. One place for good information is called Indivisible Oregon. It's a Facebook page. And it also has